Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our hosts. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now,
the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Wednesday morning on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif, and in just a moment we'll be joined with our co-host Kareem Hamid as we take a look at something that may address an issue that keeps all of us in a state of stress when we're driving our cars and get pulled over by a police officer. Well, we've had some tragedies that have happened on both sides with police and with citizens. And perhaps until we can get a handle on this gun distribution situation, we need to minimize contact so that all people can feel safer. So we'll talk about that today. And we invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and press 1. And if you are joining us live on Facebook, the Female Solution Facebook page, feel free to write in your comments, and we will share them with our listening and viewing audience. And we are going to join our co-host, Kareem Hamid, along with the American Muslim 360 family, after just a moment. So we want you to stay with us. And we have our co-host Kareem Hamid. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I hear you, but you're a little faint, just slightly, but I can hear you.
All right, let me see if I can make sure my volume is turned up on all of my devices here so that we can engage in a discussion. And of course, we invite all of you who are listening in to call in 515-605-9325, 515-605-9891, and press 1 so that your number lights up on our switchboard and we know you have something to say so we can come to you and open your microphone. So today, Brother Kareem, we wanted to take a look at an idea that we'd like to have introduced and maybe other cities across the nation may consider. We know that certain people get targeted often in traffic stops. They've done studies on this. Often young
black and brown people get pulled over for things that don't have anything to do with public safety, an expired license plate sticker, you know, which is a financial issue or maybe an issue where you forgot or whatever. But the posture taken by police is often that, you know, this is a person who is suspected of criminal activity. They may be carrying drugs, may be carrying weapons, may be on their way to do some harm. So often that is the assumption taken when officers stop someone. Well, unfortunately, a supposed routine traffic stop escalated into a situation where an officer was killed and another was badly wounded. And the city of Chicago is distressed about that. But often there have been situations where people have been stopped and guilty of no wrong, and they got shot to death. So, you know, and I just got off the phone with my associates, and of course we have opposing views on this, but I posed something on a radio show yesterday that we have a policy of no contact policing except when there is criminal behavior occurring. The things such as tail light is not working or a license plate sticker that's expired. I believe it would be safer for all parties involved if the police, if they pull up behind someone and they see something that's out of order, they take a photo of it. Say on their loudspeaker, because, you know, police have these, you know, loudspeakers that come from their car. Say the motorist, you have an expired sticker. The owner of the car will receive a ticket in the mail, and they have to either mail in or come to court and show that they have updated the sticker. Same thing. If, you know, your lights were not working, you have to show proof that you've got your lights fixed. You know, whatever the case is, they can take a photograph from their car. They can speak to the motorist from their car. There needs to be no person-to-person contact. And therefore, you avoid a lot of the tragedies that have happened with police stopping motorists for things that have nothing to do with endangering public safety. And then we've got these red light cameras. When it comes to traffic violations, put cameras wherever there are traffic control signals. And just like you go to court and they say, well, here's your car, it's clocked at this speed by this camera, and, you know, you contest the ticket and so forth. And there have been people, there have been some contesting of tickets to where they felt like maybe the red light cameras were not really in sync the way they should have been. And, you know, groups have won. But in terms of design, well, that can easily be, really, they've got cameras. Or you're speeding in a slow zone, that can be seen by cameras. So unless someone is endangering public safety or committing a crime, there really should not be policing of motorists where there is personal contact. That way you don't have police that are afraid that they walk up to a car to get shot, because that's what happened. The officer that got killed, a 29-year-old female officer, shot, you know, in the head, and her partner that was critically wounded. Well, they were stopping a carload of three young people because of an expired plate. So I went to the court yesterday, and of course, one of the young people involved, he was wounded in a gun exchange of fire, so he's in a hospital. But the other one, he was in court for his bond hearing, and of course they held him without bail. But the thought occurred to me that none of this would have happened if we were not having police out here fundraising, trying to write tickets to get people to pay fees when these people are not endangering anyone. Even if they had in their car alcohol or had in their car guns or had in their car drugs, at the time of the stop, they were committing no crime. So my thought is that we have way too much policing of motorists and people who fit a profile in the minds of motorists feel unsafe because a routine traffic stop could end in their fatality. And then you have police officers who are feeling like their lives are always in danger if they stop someone and that person has a weapon, which these people happen to have. So I would like to introduce a policy and have it enacted into law where we have no contact policing of motorists. And this would end a lot of the driving while black traffic stops where people just kind of pull you over. Well, they look suspicious. Well, you know, their turn signal didn't work, whatever the case may be. But I don't think the way we have dealt with police and traffic is adding to the safety of either the citizens or the police because it subjects everybody to other people's assumptions and overreactions. And then now someone has gotten killed, and it's the police officer. Now, when citizens get killed, police say, well, we're out here protecting public safety, and they could have been dangerous. But what if they're not dangerous? And now someone was dangerous, but they didn't become dangerous until they were told to get out of the car because of a expired plate. So I think we need in our society less policing, not more. And until we can get a handle on this gun distribution that is so widely proliferated throughout financially distressed communities, we need to not have these confrontative traffic stops where police feel like their lives are in danger and citizens feel like their lives are in danger. So what is your thought on that? Do you think we could actually have a policy where you do not see police face-to-face for something that has nothing to do with violating the law and therefore you reduce the possibility of anybody getting shot? What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with that. They are stopping people for regulation violations of a regulation operating a motor vehicle on the road. That's like if I own my own home and my grass has got too tall, then I will be contacted by mail or phone that I'm not in compliance with the standards of the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And then I have so many days to correct that. I find nothing wrong with what you are introducing here. Someone's tail light is out. I remember being stopped once on a gas station, not because my tail light was out. I had no idea that it was out. Those are minor regulations, minor violations of regulation, So to take a picture of that, mail that to the owner of the vehicle, that reduces the possibility of physical contact and what that physical contact may lead to. Usually, and we all know this, it leads to African-American people being killed for a minor traffic stop. Now, for the safety of the officer. If I was a police officer, I would be for what you are suggesting for my own safety. I don't need to be to confront someone about little or nothing, and it can escalate into me losing my life. You know? So these are minor infractions. You didn't turn your left hand signal on when you made that left turn. Well, you know, and that, and sometimes there isn't anything illegal in the car. Sandra Bland didn't have anything illegal in her car. It was the attitude of the officer and his desire to give her orders, and she followed him, and power and all of that. I watched a documentary on YouTube yesterday, and it is, I believe it is entitled, "What Does Being White Mean to You?" And they were asking, yes, they were asking Caucasians.
What does being white mean?
One woman said, you know, I really hadn't given it much thought, but when an officer pulls me over, usually he just gives me a warning and I go on my way. And I think to myself, oh, how coy and how smart I am. She said, but when I think about it, it has nothing to do with it. There is privilege. I have to admit, there is privilege that comes to being Caucasian. She didn't say Caucasian, but I want to plant that identification rather than white. But they are asking, what does it mean to you to be white? So if the average citizen feels that, and one guy said, look, it's not my fault. I was acculturated. I admit, I am racist, but I didn't create this society. It's not my fault. It's just something that just happened, you know? And I do recognize that if I go in and I want a loan or a house or something, that I'm going to actually get it. One guy said that he was employed at a factory that was predominantly African American, and he was the only Caucasian. He said, and I have to admit, my work habits, the grade of the work that I was performing was very shabby. It was very subpar. And someone from the front office came up and said, and he's expecting to get fired. He said, well, here they come. I know they're going to fire me. They walked up and said to him, we have been watching you. And we believe you are management material. He said, what?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So that type of mindset, and, I mean, and he was shocked. He shared that.
Wow.
So that type of mindset, when we come in contact with each other, we have to be aware that the simplest regulatory infraction, your plates are expired. Take a snapshot of it. Send a picture to the owner of that vehicle along with a letter of violation. Even if they do have, let's say someone does have drugs in the car, that is not the reason that you stop them. You do not know that. You're stopping them for a minor regulatory violation.
Right.
Now that has escalated, and let's face it now, if someone is transporting drugs, they are armed. And they do not want to go to jail if they can help it.
Right.
See? So there is the possibility of the officers or the passengers in the car losing their life that could all be avoided if we did not over-police on these small, insignificant, regulatory vehicle violations. I agree with you. Yes, I do, because usually we don't, when we step out of the car, in a lot of cases, that person is never able to step back in. They are transported to a hospital.
That's what
I agree with you. Yes, let's stop the over-policing of minor regulatory violations.
Yes. Well, you know, this is one of those things that I really want to see all the way through and have it proposed. You know, I'm going to work with the alderman, see who is willing to sponsor a bill to this effect. I'm going to talk to the police commander about it. And I understand they just signed their contract here in Chicago. But, you know, this is pretty much a nationwide situation, the over-policing, the paranoia that police have. Yes, there are a lot of guns. Yes, there's a lot of marijuana that isn't being sold under a license. But these conditions that exist, we as a society collectively allowed the gun manufacturers to target other areas to sell their weaponry in times of supposed peace. They're still making money through an undeclared urban war. You have various factions of people. You have personal beef going on. You have all of these things, and you have people who are willing to purchase guns and distribute them on the street. So, yes, you have citizens, and I've had police friends tell me that in some cases the people on the street outgun the police. They have automatic weapons of war. Well, we as a society collectively allow that because of our fear of each other and because of an underground economy that in many ways are supported by every industry. You know, if someone comes in and they want to buy a car for cash, and it might be drug money, but the car dealer is not going to say, well, no, I'm not going to sell you this car until I know that your money is gained legally and lawfully. They're going to take the money. Banks, you know, they don't deny someone a bank account because their money might be gotten through crime or violence. So it's hypocritical for us to talk about punishing people who are involved in that underground economy that often is supported through weaponry, you know, protecting your drug territory or whatever your case may be, because everybody who's in business does business with people who have money without question as to how they got it. So we need to stop being self-righteous about that. That's my opinion on that. And I do believe that there is a stereotype in the minds of police officers that a young person with any kind of appearance that they feel fits the type of person they think is involved in the drug gang crime element, they're going to conduct a traffic stop differently than that white woman who you said, oh, they just give me a warning. Well, these officers, they stop the people in the car, of the male and two males and a female, and they demanded that the driver get out of the car and hand his keys to the female who was sitting next to him, and they wanted him to get out, pat him down, everything. Well, they don't do that to the white woman. They don't have her get out of the car because of her plate sticker is expired. They don't search her. So since this is happening, it needs to not happen. We need to have no contact with motorists and police officers so that nobody's violated. That what I propose. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take your call and talk more about some of the cases that could have been avoided had we not been focusing on having police issue tickets for things that have nothing to do with public safety. They may be financial issues with the city or the state in terms of funds that need to be paid to keep the car in compliance with whatever licensing and stickers and permits need to be paid for. These are financial issues, not criminal issues. Police shouldn't be having to face motorists and fear for their lives when they do. So we'll talk about that when we come back. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1, area code 863. You're up next. And if you are joining us live on Facebook, feel free to write in your comments. We will share them with our listening audience. We'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed into the swing of things? Well, don't worry. You are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Oh man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host, Kareem Hamid. And we have asked the question about 44A's bill proposed. We are looking at working with our local officials and state and federal officials on a bill for no contact policing, which can end some of these driving while black traffic stops. It can even protect the lives of police officers who are in fact putting themselves in danger every time they stop a motorist who may be armed. And we want to keep everyone.
Unmuted.
So this is what we propose, and we certainly want to get your thoughts as we look at ways to make our society better, even as we correct some of the things that need correction. So we're going to go to our phone line. So if you have a call on the line, let me know, and we'll, of course.
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, let's go to 863, and then we'll go to your switchboard and get your caller's remarks as well.
Okay.
All right, area code 863, give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comment, please.
Yeah, L.A., Central Florida. I think what most people, some people already know, but for those who don't know, the primary function of the police department is revenue collection. No matter what kind of crime that you can think of, from a parking ticket to a serial killer, revenue collection lies behind all of it. Every type of crime that you can think of, or even any city ordinance, including your grass wasn't cutting, it's a dollar sign connected to every last thing. Crimes are basically profit centers for a municipality or the particular government agency that classifies this profit center as a crime. So with that in mind, in order to get the legislation that you're talking about passed, you have to build into your game plan, okay, we got to raise enough money to replace the gun lobby or partner with the gun lobby. Then you also have to look at DAs who run for election and judges who run for election. You got to have money to replace any kind of money that they will receive from people who have a vested interest in, you know, guns or something of that nature. And then you'll probably have to partner up or replace the money that comes in from the police unions who bankroll a lot of legislation in the first place. So those are my comments.
Well, as always, right on point, L.A., we certainly appreciate that thought. And I think that kind of highlights where we have our problem. If everything really has as its motive profit-making, revenue-raising, then we really can't fix the problem until we fix our intentions. If police are out here to raise funds and therefore, and they are, because they, even when they need to make their quota of tickets and that they need to issue, they go to the impoverished areas. That's one of the things that sparked the riots in Ferguson, when they saw the extreme focus on the economically distressed areas to write tickets, to towing cars, you know, all the things that just escalate already economically distressed situation. But this was about raising revenue. And you're preying upon the people who don't have money, penalizing them for not having money and charging them money for not having money. And this is what the people just exploded with anger because of that. So you're right. This is really what it is. If the police are expected to raise a certain amount of money through their ticketing, because if you arrest somebody, they got to pay bail money to get out, so more revenue raising. When you do that, and that becomes part of how the city budgets, how it's going to pay its bills, well, then you can't stop unless you replace that means of revenue generating. So that's a great point. So we got to figure that out. We got to find another way to raise money rather than have police write tickets and make arrests. That's a great point. So, Kareem, you have a caller on your line. Go right ahead. Take that call.
Yes.
I think LA raised a great point. We got the reality of what that is and fix it.
That's right. Okay, error code 706-627. Please state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Brother Muhammad from Columbus, Georgia. I just want to say that the bottom root of all of this, and what all of you have said is correct, needs to be done, needs to be looked at. And then bottom line, we have to look at this country going on about 400 or 500 years old. And they're coming from such a terrible animal level of how they treat each other and everything like that. And most of this, I got about 12 years in security, building security, armed security, unarmed security. And I noticed in the training, they do not have the maturity of their job description. They're not taught that level of maturity. And racism is always at the forefront of making basically a not now, but still pretty well dominant Caucasian police force. They have been victim of their own scheme that Shaitan is using them to do other people of color, as we all know that. And they are not mature enough, as we aren't mature enough, to deal with it, to bring about a faster pace of recognizing that the motivation behind everything we do almost here in the United States of America is basically like what all of you said. And there need to be some boundaries. Now, in my experience in overseas countries of watching the police forces and things like that, they have learned that killing people and destroying the same thing that you depend on, their revenue, their livelihood, their being a part of the society and making a contribution to society, don't make no sense, as well as the moral fact that we are supposed to be from one soul. They all know this, but these things are not taught, even in the videos. And I see many of them in my security training. They show that they automatically, everybody backs out the way, let the Caucasian mentality and racism and all of the years of thinking their superiority take charge of the situation. But they don't understand that on their badge it says conservatory of the peace. Most states still use that terminology. What their first and foremost job is as a police officer. Is it conserve and protect the peace from robbery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. And like you said, that's why they got them broke down to be misdemeanors and felonies. There's a reason for that breakdown, so it tells the trained police officer what level of maturity you're supposed to go into to stop. If it's a burning thing, like you said, dealing with the street light, you don't escalate it, like you said, by telling the person to get out the car and all that, to question their driver's license and everything like that, you know. And we are very slow because of racism. I hate to keep putting it that way, but that's what it truly is, and immaturity. Because Caucasians haven't learned yet that they are not superior to everybody else. Everybody is human. They're learning it, and we thank Allah for that. But they are not learning enough because they don't have monitors. We don't have people of moral character and moral maturity. Because really, there should be a training team of experienced police officers to make sure that these academies that are training their police officers for their cities is also making sure that they deal with these 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. Some of them just came back from the military, and they are aggressive and have a lot of personal problems going on. How to control all that energy and confusion that they're dealing with, and then at the same time, they're looking at the material benefit and in that superiority, like you were saying when you watched that program, where they was asking what does it mean to be white. See, a lot of them were surprised that they had been using that institution that they learned from mama, grandpa, and history you know, always far back, even in their religious beliefs, they see that it points to them to be the father, you know, to be in charge, and people of color are just children used to serve them during their different degrees of maturity. But like I said again, I've learned from having so much security training and how that when you go to a good training school, they really teach you the word security and what security and what brings about the type of security that you're looking for, building security, street security, criminal security. What kind of security are you trying to provide for the society so that there'll be peace? But our police officers, due to their have not been educated in the real dangers and evil of thinking one human being is more superior than the other because of their skin color or their money or whatever. It still has not been taught to the police officers who are responsible for that in their training. So again, like you said, all those Veterans Day ideas that you're speaking of is true. The money that the other brothers just got to speak on is true. But all that stuff starts in the training class. If we don't have mature people like from the city whose sole responsibility is to make sure that the academies who they plan to train the police officers are using definition of every word in their contract, every word in their training, so they'll know exactly that there's no room for their personal conclusion about a scenario that they drive into. They have to follow, like they always trying to lie to the public when it happens, that they're following the book. But then as they go to court and it gets closed, they'll find out their own self a little too late, because it's sad to see a police officer go to the penitentiary for taking someone's life, lose his life, his family lose his life, it's rare, but every now and then they do get found guilty for murder or manslaughter. And their whole life is ruined because they were acting like children in a sandbox. And when something emotional happens, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's very rare. I think that's why it was such a big deal when Derek Chauvin got convicted for the murder of George Floyd, and he was shocked because it is.
Yeah.
I don't even know of any instances in history where a police officer got convicted for killing a civilian. Because they have been given carte blanche to make life and death decisions on the street, and usually they justify killing someone. So it's very rare. And as long as we have this intention to have them extract money from people, whether they're arresting them for a crime or – and a lot of times what happens, and that's how things escalate, they'll stop somebody – and then they'll take a posture like they're going to arrest them. And the person said, well, what are you arresting me for? And they say, oh, you're resisting arrest. And so then they get arrested for resisting arrest. But the question, what are you arresting for anyway? So that whole scenario, it creates so much distress in people. And when there is a violent response to the person who doesn't want to be arrested, then the police then escalate their use of force. So we've had a lot of there are laws pending now discussing what is the appropriate use of force, but really things that don't have anything to do with criminal behavior should not.
Right. And let me say this. And let me say this right quick. And since then, minorities who are police officers have learned how to hide behind white supremacy and also become the aggressor.
Well, like you said, it's a trend.
You'd be surprised, just like the police officer who thought he killed the brother in Florida, you know, bad security training, and there's a lot of black police officers just brutal on black people who they stop because they know that the system is set up to protect the image of the white police officer, you know. And anyone can hide behind that image because that's what they portray when they advertise. We know they're doing it now because they have it. But all through the last 100 years or so, all over our United States of America, when they see police officers, you don't see a person of color. come to your mind? The image come to your mind is some big, muscle-bound, military-looking police officer who is responsible for enforcing the law.
Well, let me ask you this.
You know that I've seen, experienced in training classes, our brothers and sisters of Hispanic or whatever color, different skins of color, they have also submitted and looking for the benefits. That's why they're always showing black police officers or minority police officers are criminals, always taking the dope money, always, all of our movies are dealing with black police officers or black men or trying to make us look like we're involved in the crime just as much as the white police officers.
Well, let me ask you this.
And the corruption.
Brother Muhammad, let me ask you this question, because I was at court yesterday, and there were a couple of cases that they tried, and you know, they all involved, you know, this was a bond hearing for people who've been arrested. All of the defendants, there might have been one who was white, but the majority of them were people of African descent. They were black people. And the issue was they had a record, you know, they had been on probation, were a felon, were illegally carrying firearms, illegally carrying drugs. And a lot of them were young people. They were maybe, you know, under 30 even. So there seems to be in the minds, not just of white, but in the minds of blacks, that young black males are dangerous. And we tend to feel like they need to be controlled and policed and contained. And so often in our minds, we will feel that the extreme response is justified. How do we change our opinion, or is this based in a reality that we have allowed to be created, where young people, due to lack of parenting, opportunities, or whatever the case may be, have gotten involved in the underground crime economy? And is this a reality? And if so, how do we fix it without excessive policing?
Okay, the quick answer to that is two things you got to do. You have only one choice. You either come from a religious re-education of the society and know that their natural inclination to be morally upright is part of it. Then those who are not under that influence, it starts, like you said a few minutes ago, it belongs with the parenting at home. We have to start educating the parents of their responsibility of making sure that their children won't fall into the role of following leaders who have no moral character or have no religious connection. Because when you look at the hip-hop and all like that, we have our people wearing a cross on their neck, but yet still they have our women up there dancing off crazy. They dancing off crazy. They talking about drive-by shooting and everything like that. So black people who are not of religious persuasion are of a religious persuasion that does not stress brotherhood and sisterhood and family life and community life according to a high standard of what they believe in, then we have to talk to them why they're in those oppressive situations, like our project around the United States of America. Those are very vital communities that we as parents and fathers of the community should make sure that we exert a lot of time in educating our brothers and sisters who are on the lower scale of the economic level, come to their neighborhood, come to their project, and start early in showing them that we want to help, and understanding about the police, understanding about racism, you know, and help the parents that are in those type of situations, because their minds and their lives have been so distracted by needing food, bugs are bothering them, all kind of stuff is bothering them. But they need the people in the community who are supposed to be concerned about their fellow brotherhood and sisterhood go to these places where they see that. you know, like we used to do back in the day. You know, the pastors, the Muslims, the Jews, well, sometimes you can see them. They came out on the corner of where the drug dealer said, we don't do that no more. We don't come out and teach and show the children of low-income families that there's another way. By the time they find out about it, they're already involved in crime at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. But if we're in there helping the parents and these single parents and these brothers and sisters, regardless of what their nationality is, but they're in the low-income level project, living on dead-end, most of the houses on the streets that they live on are ready to be condemned and demolished. Those are the people who need the education that we're talking about now. They need to come to their door. It's like they're knocking on the door down about this COVID and everything and telling people, we need to make that part of the educational process of what is the right way to go in the system of the city that you live in, or you're going to have problems. Don't let your children at school. We need to be over at the school. A quick example. Most of the gangs, here where I'm in Clemens, Georgia, most of the gang activity is in the schools, not on the streets. You can ride them down the street. You might see a few of our teenagers strutting their colors and all that kind of stuff. But I have found out, I'm telling you from working with the principals here in this city that I'm in, that the most gang activity and recruiting is in the schools. Otherwise, your child can be just as good as anything. But every time that child get on that school bus and go to that school, they are approached by gang members. They are approached with the fantasy of living the gang life. You know, even though they're monitored. And I'm speaking from experience. I have a grandson in jail now for gang activities. And he has always been chaperoned because he's a Muslim. But I come to find out investigating what happened to him, that all the gang activity is in the schools of America. Now, they done got smart. They don't do it on the street no more. The older men and the older gang leaders were using these kids because the kids are not going to get the big time in jail or whatever they get. But they're using our children because of their innocence and their uneducational ignorance of the law and the good life. So they're doing it in the school. The teachers are scared of them. Don't you know, when I found out about my grandson, and I called the news media, I went down and talked to the police task force, and they all agreed with me, don't you know the school will not let them come in and investigate what I was telling them, even though I had videos shown to me by the principal of the school of how my grandson was involved. And they denied it. And they have a law here in Columbus, Georgia, I don't know about other cities, if the school do not want the media and even the gang task force, if they don't want them to come into the school and investigate allegations, the law in the city does not let them do it. So I'm saying the education is going to be upon the free, responsible parents in the community, like you said, making legislation. You're going about the right way and you're talking the right kind of stuff. But while that's going on, the most important thing is going to the projects, going to the areas of low income, because that's where the gangs recruit from. That's where, by the time they get 11 to 12 years old, they done smoked their first joint of reefer or done tried their first smoking of crack. By the time they get to the level where we start looking at them because they're big enough to do something, we know they done already been corrupted. You know, alcohol, drugs, single parenthood, and the mother and them might be already gave in from their single parents. And they even though they might be 30, 40 years old, have never been given the love and the pros and cons of who they are, what they should be doing, that we know is inside of them. We're not giving ourselves the opportunity to talk to the good in the children that are coming up in this world. And we all know why. Because Satan is trying to make sure of that.
Well, you're saying about
sure by the time we get to them and talk to their moral character and their natural inclination to want to treat their fellows in the right, they're already been damaged by hip-hop,
well,
other music too, you know. So that's and our
well, I think you've pinpointed, Brother. I think you've pinpointed what the issue is. They have not been given the love And so by the time we realize there's a problem, it's too late. They've already been damaged.
Yep.
And so it still comes back on us. And you can't change a person from the outside. They have to be changed from the inside, and that is with love. Our task is to, as Mama D always says, love souls into shape. If we are going to fix this problem, we can't blame the people who are manifesting their reaction to what we have allowed to be created for them, the unloving society at the face. We have to, as you said, bring the love. We have to be involved in their lives, help their distressed families. If we know a single mother is struggling and her son is trying to help out with his drug business to take care of the family, and the gang is providing the financial support and the emotional support that people need from a family, because that's all the gangs are. They are their support systems for people who don't have a support system, their protection for people who feel unprotected. So rather than us criminalize people for responding to a need that they have that has not been fulfilled in a way that is healthy and wholesome, we need to fulfill that need. So, well, but thank you, Brother Muhammad, for clarifying a whole lot of this, because that really is what the situation is, a lack of love, and so we need to fix it. We got to take another break, and we'll come back and take some more of your calls and take your comments on Facebook Live, and, of course, take our comments from our co-host, Kareem Hamid. And we invite you to call in, 515-605-9325. Press 1 so we know you have something to say. We want to present this legislation to change the way police interact with motorists. And we don't need to have any contact between police and motorists, as long as there is fear and suspicion on both sides. Let's just stop all contact. Like Brother said, we can do it for COVID, we can do it for crime. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. We are a part of the online network of Associated Internet Radio Hosts. On Air. On Air empowers you with transformative news and interactive radio TV shows. This is such a wonderful time to be alive and to see our human family coming together as one community as a result of that powerful tool, the Internet. We can now talk directly to each other all over the world. There's no need for conflict or misunderstanding. There's no need for violence to solve our differences. We can talk to each other face-to-face until we reach an agreement. On Air offers a fantastic global guide to communicators from all over the world who are using their internet platforms to inspire us to strive to be our best selves in order to become the kind, compassionate, loving people we were all born to be. Once we do that, we'll see planet Earth transformed into a place of peace. Subscribe to the recommended YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and podcasts created by these Voices of Enlightenment. On Air provides daily news briefs and a weekly magazine to keep you abreast of events and opportunities. On Air news affiliates in television, radio, and print share information, insight, and interviews with notable personalities. Go to onaireverywhere.com. for a daily dose of uplifting news. We're on air everywhere, online all the time.
This is Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, spiritual counselor and advisor. I invite you to a private reading in the areas of business, health, finances, relationships for introductory cost of $20. Please call, because there is a higher power that can help me help you. 312-802-4743. Peace and blessings to you all. Call me, 312-802-4743.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses. And we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being. And we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Yes, we are back, and we want you to give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 515-605-9891. Join us tomorrow for our new show, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. We're looking forward to an invigorating discussion. You know, what Brother Muhammad was saying about what has to happen, it really, that is what we would look at as a soulful solution. We need to reach the souls of the people involved, and we need to help them with the transforming of their lives. We need to help them reform from the inside out. Force has never worked. Even with religion, force has never worked. We look at the spreading of various religions, and maybe earlier the intention might have been, well, let's help these people to behave in a way that is conforming with the rules of society. And for those people who can't get themselves together, we'll make them do it. We'll punish them if they don't. So the idea has always been you're going to make somebody, you're going to force somebody to do right. And you really can't force someone to do right. They have to be conditioned to do right from the inside. You can't do it under religion. You can't do it under law. You can't do it under military. You can't force correct behavior. That has to be taught. That has to be ingrained. You have to understand that we are all one people, one family, one community, and you don't mistreat your family. So that has to be part of who they are, and it can't happen if they grown up in an abused society that abuses them. They're not going to respond by being in order if the way they've been treated is badly. So, I mean, he brought up some great points. What do you think we can do to change the society that has created the people who are constantly breaking the law?
You know, you can put a person or a plant in very inhospitable environments. You know, you can create an environment or have them, unbeknownst to them, create an environment that works against them. That works against them. We should never stop advising, never stop teaching, never stop passing on vital information that is needed to improve our behavior, correct our thinking, and when you correct the thinking, then the behavior follow. But at the same time, I look at our youth, and they are saying to us, if they are not, then they need to be saying to us, what did y'all leave me? I hear you, and you're right. But what did you do with your life? Mm. What did y'all leave us? We're out here in the wilderness on our own, and you're criticizing us because we are in survival mode.
Yes, that's it.
You know, we have to be honest, transparency. Admit, say those things that are our secret thoughts.
Yeah.
That are our secret thoughts. Accept that and be willing to say that. Yes, we shall continue to advise. We shall continue to teach. We shall continue to try to reach them with words of affirmation, uplifting words. But at the same time, we have to construct and build an environment that will aid us, that will aid them in their maturation, in the nurturing. I mean, we can see all the words. And he steps out of his house, and what does he see? He walked down the street. What does he see?
A devastated community.
And we are visual. Yes, we are visual. And whatever our visual, our vision falls upon, it affects our spirit.
Yeah.
Our spirit. What you see can affect your spirit. So this is a long-term solution. I don't believe this is not a quickie. This is not a quickie. As a people have to build the infrastructure and the environment that we want for us and our children, and not just us, all people that want right. But there has to be a physical, material application to all of the good, sound advice that we give. It is correct. They will admit, yes, you're right, sir. But if I put this dope bag down, what do you have to replace
it? Absolutely. What do you have to replace it? Because at the end of the day.
So we have to start thinking like that, like real fathers.
Yeah.
I'm speaking mainly to the men that should be the part of the leadership of us as a race of people. We have to, you know, there's so much to be said on that, but our children, they have the right to ask us, why are you complaining to us? What did you leave us?
What did you leave?
We have to admit that we were led astray. We were led astray. After the civil rights movement, we left the idea of economic security. We left the idea of real community life. They sent messages to us on a singular level. Don't let nobody tell you nothing. Don't listen to nobody. You are unto yourself. Separating language. And let's party. Let's disco. I remember now. Let's disco. And then they dropped the nuclear bomb on us. Crack came. We are dealing with the aftermath of that right now. But many of us have overcome. But we need to get back on building the life that we speak to our children about. We didn't leave them anything. I'm just saying.
Well,
And now, one more thing, too. The police, at their inception, they were organized to control the poor and to contain us.
Right. Protect.
That mindset is yet there. Protect other people's property from us.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I'm glad that they stopped this, the stop and frisk in New York. Just because someone is African American, they would stop and frisk them, and that was a bad result. Many good people were harassed and mistreated just because of a look. A look. So that's where this conversation began. There, as concerning the small infractions, how can we eliminate or eradicate that personal confrontation over something that is a regulatory issue?
Right. Well,
let's
so far
on that, inshallah.
Yeah, you know, God willing, you know, we've touched on a couple of reasons why it exists. Number one, it's revenue generating. Police are out here expected to generate a certain amount in revenue through tickets and arrests, so that's all part of the city's economy, a part of the city's budget. Let's be honest about it. You know, let's stop lying and let's tell the truth, because we can't fix the problem until we're truthful. That is what it is, and this is why police do what they do. I mean, if you come in at the end of the day and you haven't written any tickets, you haven't arrested anybody, well, what were you doing, sitting in Dunkin' Donuts all day drinking coffee? Where's the sign that you work? So you must find some people doing wrong. You must create a condition where it appears someone's doing wrong so that you look like you're working. That's the first problem. And then the second problem, we have allowed a void to be created by not providing wholesome ways for people to earn a living. We know we've done that. And people are in emotional pain. And when you're in pain, you look to self-medicate. That's what drugs are for. So the drugs were made available to a people who were in pain. They're in economic distress. They're in emotional pain. And so the drugs become a way out. So a whole economy was organized around that. No different than in the drug stores, but they're not arresting Walgreens or Costco or anybody. They're doing the same thing, providing a way for people to medicate themselves out of their emotional pain. But when people on the street do it, that's considered illegal. They get arrested and go to jail. But why don't we, instead of blaming them for the problem that they're taking the opportunity to get paid to fix, why don't we remove the conditions that cause pain? Makes more sense. Well, let's go to our phone line and take more of your calls as we seriously think this through, of removing all contact between motorists and police officers until we can fix the problem we created, which causes people's lives to be in danger at a routine traffic stop. Both the police and the citizens are living in fear of each other.
We got to fix that. Mm-hmm. Let's go to area code 312-823. Grand Rising, introduce yourself to our listening audience and give us your thoughts.
Oh, Grand Rising, Rashida. My thought is that, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Good to hear your voice.
Oh, good to hear us too. You know, my great-great-grandfather, he was the commander of Lemon Street Police District back in the 30s. And the same problem we're having, my grandmother told me about, you know, as far as the violence. And she said in the 30s, it wasn't anything to walk outside and walk over a bleeding dead body. So this is something that's been going on, and I think that we people have some knowledge and concerns should start focusing on universal prevention as the best strategy, because violence comes in many forms, such as self-directed, self-harm, or suicidal attempts, and interpersonal and family and inmates, partners, et cetera, have a collective, you know, involvement in this. And it can also be inflicted in close relationships and political or economically motivated situations. It's distressing. Violence also, exposure to violence carries, as a study, it was a tumor, I think, a study that they did on people, and they found out that exposure to violence carries numerous political consequences spanning over three domains, and it increases mortality, morbidity, and disability. So it increased psychological effects, including depression. So when a person who's been bullied in the community, for example, or been exposed to violence already, they can't have, you know, like an independent association when the police come after them. They can't, some of them, because of their exposure to the abuses and the tortures that they have received right in their community, including violence events that are interpersonal and intentional. So those type of things, we people need to start to organizing precinct by precinct to educate our people, because it's already enough actual violence that's happening in our community. And they had a study. It was a study on the general population. It's called the Chongsong study, something like that. And they saw what violence had even done to intimate partners and families. So, nonetheless, we need to organize and start teaching, get people from the criminal justice system to come into our communities to forums, so we can start inviting people to come out and see what's happening and what we're allowing to happen to our, to contribute to our health problems, mentally and otherwise. So they need to solve that violence also increased skin disease and all type of cardiovascular disease. And even if you haven't been the one perpetrating the violence, just witnessing like the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King, that's embedded in our subliminal conscious, and there's a degree of adjustment that needs to be done. You know what I'm saying? Following these trauma exposure. And right now, our communities are traumatized. I was looking at the news break this morning and got become a nervous wreck. They found a dead child in Chicago, black. So all this stuff, and then we're already oppressed. Then when we go, and the police get out there because of the the psychological effects of violence, we want to flee. My son, the police got after him. Now, his son got killed recently. Police got after him for a traffic violation. But he was negligent because he didn't go to court. So, therefore, there was a warrant. He got the car. The police just coming after him. He's a grown man. He is granddaddy now. He started running. Trauma. Mm. And so our police that already have fear in him, he's traumatized. One of those kind of police going to do is shoot. So we need to stop the miseducation and start reeducating and start right here in our own communities and let it spread internationally because violence is everywhere. But when people see us, dark-skinned people, now all they associate us with killing ourselves and violence. So I would like, I started something, but I'm only one human being. It's called The New Solution, and I'm doing it through a team of professionals who care, and they provide individual, flexible, in-home, school, and community-based mental health services. But I wish we all could do it, especially since this police that, and I didn't see a soul, Muslim or non-Muslim, come out publicly and say anything when the police, when president of the police association said, the white man said that he feel as though every Muslim should have a bullet in him. Now, that's putting more fear, too. And a lot of people have that. But we're so docile and complacent, we didn't say anything about it. So I just moved on out.
You're somebody. You just said something. Something has been said.
Yeah, but it's nothing. And it affects my heart. So I can't go around tapping to get rid of the fear because it's more than the tap that causes it, you know. And we have to be conscious of what causes our problems because we can become seriously ill because of our behavior changes and everything. And I'm a living witness because mine changed after my grandson, and he wasn't a bad boy, not because he was my grandson, but he was hardworking, he was successful, 28-year-old man, didn't use drugs, none of that crap. We know that for a fact. And they just drove by and shot him in the head when he was picking up his sister. So there's many. I've witnessed three killings, walking and driving on the expressway and then shooting out the expressway in the black community at each other. A woman got shot in the head. Then on 75th and 8th, going to the fuel station, a man lying there dead, shot. Trying to get into an Uber. Thought it was one of those Uber cars and somebody shot him. Then down on 75th and Richmond, seven people got all in the same interim. That's too much. So it's telling me that I need to do something. I hope those who, especially those who call themselves or do have affiliation with universal programs, that they start a strategy for prevention in general, because the targeted roots or causes of violence in order to prevent it from reoccurring, you know, this is the role of public health service, and it's utmost important in reducing the long-term health consequences among our people.
And absolutely. Yes. Well, we know, Sister Rashida, you've been out here a long time, expressing the fact that we are living in a state of trauma. We have been traumatized, and we are responding to the trauma, and we haven't received relief from the trauma, and that is why this cycle continues. We have to stop the cycle of trauma, and the first step is to admit it exists. You're correct. We got to take our last break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the things that can be done to change this cycle. And it is within our power to do so. It is within our power to change the conditions that we created. So
We're going to talk about that and take more of your calls. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 515-605-9891. We are joined by our American Muslim 360 family, our co-host, Kareem Hamid, and, of course, we want to hear from you. Now, of course, the bill that we're talking about has not yet been introduced. I'll be working with my alderman, my former alderman, other sensitive members of city council to create legislation that can be introduced. And certainly I'll be speaking with officials on the police department. Now, perhaps because of this latest tragedy, 29-year-old female officer was shot during a routine traffic stop. Now that, and her partner was critically wounded, now perhaps they can see that it really isn't in their best interest to have to confront motorists who may be armed if the reason for the stop is not related to public safety. An expired plate sticker is not a public safety issue. And do we really need to have police facing danger when it's unnecessary? And every motorist who, in the minds of police, fit a profile, need to feel the danger and the stress of being stopped for a financial issue or a vehicle malfunction issue such as a taillight that has gone out and you have to fear for your life. We need to not have contact with each other until we can fix our relationship and our motivation for policing. So we'll be right back, and area code 314, you're next. And of course, if you're on our switchboard and you have a comment, please press 1 so we can make sure we give you enough time to speak. And if you're on the switchboard, American Motion 360, please press 1 so we can get your thoughts. And we will be right back. Great. All right. We'll certainly take that call when we come back. So stay with us.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul, whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Global radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif, along with our co-host Kareem Hamid and our American Muslim 360 family, as we address a proposal that we intend to have introduced to the City Council in Chicago as a result of a recent tragedy. 29-year-old officer, female officer, shot in the face during a traffic shot. Almost point-blank range between the eyes, and she died. Now, her partner was also critically wounded, and this is very distressing for the police department. It certainly is a police officer's worst nightmare when they stop a motorist, and so that's why many of them, when they stop young black males who fit in their minds a description of probable gang involvement, they're often on high alert and often treat someone with a tail light that's out or a plate sticker that's expired as if they're a criminal, even when they're not. This causes fear, and as Rashida described her situation, her loved one, you know, someone who takes off running out of fear that they're going to be killed. So this is not a good relationship that we have. And until we fix that relationship, we need to minimize contact. And so we're proposing that when police pull up behind a motorist, if there is an issue, whether it is a tail light that is not working or a plate sticker that's expired, that they put on their lights, stop the motorist, and do not get out of the car. They take a picture of whatever the malfunction is, whatever the problem is, and they say on their loudspeaker from their car, you have a plate sticker that's expired, or you have a tail light that isn't working. The owner of the vehicle is going to receive a ticket in the mail, and they have to either come to court or contested by mail showing that they have gotten this problem corrected. No contact with the motorist at all. I believe that would make it safer for both the police and the motorist, and I believe that the police will now be more willing to consider that change in policy and procedure for their own safety, and certainly it will stop all of these driving while black traffic stops in which motorists are fearing for their lives. So this is what we intend to introduce to our city council, and we hope that it becomes something that other cities adopt. We'll be talking to our congressional representatives on how we can maybe make this more of a national policing policy. They have legislation on the in the works now, based on what happened with George Floyd and the knee on the neck and, you know, that kind of death
as a result of strangulation, basically. But we need to stop. We need to end the traffic stop where there is contact between motorists and police when the issue was not anything having to do with public safety or criminal behavior. We need to not have that. So, Brother Perry, I'm going to take area code 314, and then we can take the caller on your switchboard. And if you're listening online, want to join this conversation, you've got a thought, give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 515-605-9891. And press 1 so that we know you have a thought you'd like to share. So area code 314, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your opinion.
Well, my opinion is this, is that when no police officers approach their car, they should have had their guns drawn. And they probably
well,
be living.
They have their guns drawn. And
no, they should have had their guns drawn as if they was doing a felony stop. And here's the thing. People who have expired license plates are a safety threat.
How
because
so?
Usually they don't have any car insurance. And then when they don't have any car insurance, they go out, just like you had in St. Louis, there on Vandeventer and Enright, where a man got killed from some young 19-year-olds, stole a car, being chased, or running from the police, and plowed into an innocent person's vehicle and killed him. So they usually don't have car insurance. They go out and tear up somebody else's property, put them in a financial bind. That is a safety issue. If you hurt somebody, that's a safety issue. And people should take, you know, they do everything that they can for people that's in financial problems or financial strikes when they issue paper tags. A paper tag allows you to drive your car and not have to pay the sales tax right away. But I've seen people out on the streets driving on paper tags that's over a year, 2 years old. And then seemingly like they're the one that when you're waiting at the red light, they'll go around you on the right side, or even in some cases, they will go around you on the left side, right on through the light that is red where you're supposed to stop for traffic coming the other way. Now, there's something wrong with these folks. They must be cursed or something. There in Chicago in the last 64 days, you have had over 2,200 shootings of blacks by other blacks. 2,264 days. Something wrong with these people. You got laws now where you can go into stores and fill up a basket short, $50 short of $1,000 worth of value and walk right out with it. Now, you can't say that's not designed to help somebody. You got a prosecutor in St. Louis, Kim Fox, who said, well, if it looked like they need it, don't cite them for a violation of what they stole. So I'm sorry, I can't go along with that. And you know, you was out in Ferguson. Ferguson used to be a very viable area. Blacks left fled crime in North St. Louis, your Walnut Parks, your O'Fallon's, your Ville's. A lot of them ended up in Ferguson. Then, of course, whites moved, and probably rightfully so, because if you look at 2014 and see what happened, those blacks that initially moved to Ferguson, they ended up and moved further west across the Missouri River into St. Charles County, where the population is about 95% white. And the police department is usually all white. So it can't be that they're running scared from whites. The police. So anyway, no, I couldn't go with that. But I tell you one thing, I'm glad that Missouri passed a school choice bill. It should be more money for the parents to take away from the present traditional school system and put your child where you feel is best for them, where they don't have to be around all that danger and mayhem. That's my response.
Well, you know, I always appreciate your point of view, Bianchi. I certainly do. I had a conversation this morning with my associate who expressed that same thought. I'm going to take another call. Just wanted to, breaking news, which kind of lets you know how one traumatizing situation escalates and leads to another. Well, the incident with the officer getting shot, the fatal shooting police officer, his name is Elliot Prince, 29-year-old. Well, the two men involved, Morgan, who he was not a shooter, but he took off running when he was ordered to get out of the car and in the process of getting served, and his brother, and Monty Morgan, 21 years old, had a gun, and there was marijuana in the car. So Monty is the one who was charged with first-degree murder. He was shot in exchange of gunfire, and so he's in a hospital. So his mother was coming to see him and was arrested when she came to see him at the hospital. And now the news is reporting the mother of two brothers charged in connection with the fatal shooting of Chicago police officer Ella French was arrested Tuesday after she tried to gain access to the hospital room in which her son was staying, according to authorities. Police said they responded to a disturbance call around 8:30 a.m. at Advocate Christ Medical Center in suburban Oak Lawn, 15 miles southwest of downtown Chicago. The mother of the brothers allegedly tried to enter the hospital room of Imanti, 21, who was charged with first-degree murder in Saturday's fatal shooting of Officer French, 29 years old. Fox 32 in Chicago recorded this. So now you just look at the whole trauma to this family. Whatever was going on with the young men, two young men stopped for a fire plate sticker, and all escalated into the killing of an officer, and now the mother's arrested. Now tell me, what about an expired plate sticker was endangering public safety? And I understand what Bianchi just said. But if someone's driving recklessly, having insurance is not going to change the fact if they hit someone's car. Insurance in itself doesn't make you drive better. It just pays for damage sometimes if the insurance company chooses to pay the claim after you've paid your deductible, of course. So that really still isn't a public safety issue, not having an insurance card. It really is not, in my opinion. But then you have a mother who wants to see her son, and now she's arrested. And people might say, well, what kind of mother was she that they did these things? But then, like Selene just said, what did we provide for the generation of young people that are responding to the distress that they're living in? And we're blaming them for it. But let me go to the phone line, because I don't want to preach. I want to hear you right.
I have a caller here on
area code 336 after we take the call on the American Muslim 360 line. Go right ahead.
Okay. I believe this is our brother Muhammad once more. I'm not sure. Air code 706-637. Welcome to the Female Solution.
Yes, sir. I'll just make a quick observation in support about the proposal that you're making to the city council. Like you said before, you know, when you stop a car, you know, for a visible citation, the police officer should be trained to know that if that car does happen to be a drug dealer or whatever like that, most likely that person is already under surveillance by detectives. A department of, you know, group of people who's already watching that person, and there's no reason to escalate or have our innocent police officer who stopped for a citation put themselves in that kind of position by being too aggressive. So I agree with you that. Now, number two, remember that we have Muslim police officers all across the United States. And their problem is the same problem that we have, is what do we do as a community? When I say community, I'm talking about the Muslim community in the United States of America, not any nationality of any group of people who might have people who are not Muslim. I'm talking about the Muslim. One, we have to accept that Allah said al-Islam is the best way for everything that the human beings are going through on this earth. And like the brother said earlier, when we establish the model, community of character and everything like that, to help educate and advise the United States non-Muslim communities of their character, their inner strength, their inner being, and their inner purpose, we might have a dialogue that does not commit the Muslim to be involved with something that is around. You know, like being a politician, and you know that America and the country that you represent permits homosexuality, alcohol,
so
many things that again.
I'm going to take our next call, but Brother Muhammad, one thing I want to also note that a person's sexual behavior also is not a threat to public safety. So we have to look at that. Are we really getting involved in things that aren't endangering other people's lives and believing we should have input in that? Are we doing that, believing that everything should be regulated when everything doesn't need to be regulated? But let me take some more calls because we got two more people that want to call and want to speak, and then it's about time for us to wrap up. But area code 336. Thank you, Brother Mom. We appreciate your perspective. Area code 336, introduce yourself to our listening audience and give us your thoughts.
Grand Rising, Dr. Lateef, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Mama AZ, yes. We hear you loud and clear.
I'm calling from Tucson, Arizona at Devon Gables. Greetings, family. And Brother Pianke, greetings. What did I hear Brother Pianke say about filling up a grocery cart in the store, and if they need it, if it appears that they need it, to just let them roll on out of there without any consequences? Did I hear that right?
That's how people have perhaps misinterpreted some of the things that State's Attorney Kim Foss has said about people who might be shoplifting out of hunger. And I don't have all the details of whatever she said, but I know often things that are said are misinterpreted, because none of the elected officials are condoning crime, but they are realizing that people are acting out of a desperation when they don't have access to food. And so criminalizing hunger and poverty is something that people who are seeking to live in a state of higher consciousness want to alleviate. And I think that's where whatever you said came from.
Thank us.
You know, if I can't, my daughter shared with me yesterday, that Walmart is now selling emergency dried food packets. It has been predicted that there will be a shortage of food in this country. So I just wanted to share that with the listening audience. In Walmart is selling dried food packets.
Emergency dried food packets.
For people to purchase at the store.
Fear of hunger is real. When people thought they'd be shut down, I mean, they went to the store and, you know, stocking up baskets full of food. So panic buying happens. And even when people make poor decisions as to death, it's out of fear. Let's go to area code 708-566.
I think you're probably going to be the last call ready to take before we go. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comment.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Brian Vickers. I'm calling from Hazelcrest, Illinois. And one thing I know that to elaborate on what you just talked about, if people seem to be acting out of fear, not so much because of the pandemic and the damage that it has caused, but again, you know, high unemployment, although there seems to be jobs being advertised everywhere, but there's still a lot of people who don't have jobs and who don't have the necessities that they need to be able to survive and live off of. And when people are desperate, they're going to resort to unspeakable acts, even lawlessness. And
that is true.
And we need a better economic state, not just that's particularly amongst us as black people. We need to get to a better place economically.
And I think that's doable as well. Well, we certainly thank you for those thoughts, Brian. And that really is, it comes out to that being the bottom line. We've criminalized poverty. Sometimes people don't have car insurance because they can't afford it. They don't get a place ticket because they don't have the money yet. Or they don't get something fixed on their car, you know, because they don't have the money. So as long as we criminalize poverty, we're going to always have a criminal justice system that is unjust. But I think for the most part, until we fix those things, we need to minimize contact between police and citizens. If there's no activity being engaged in, we really don't need police. And if no one called you, don't come. Don't stop people because they look so-called suspicious. Leave people alone. And I think everybody will be safe. If we can do it for COVID, we can do it for social distancing. So when we're anti-social distancing, but thank you, Brother Kareem. We appreciate you so much for all you do and the wisdom you share. And thank you to all who have given your thoughts. Join us tomorrow for Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. We're looking forward to having some soulful solutions to the issues we face, because that really is where it starts, in the soul. Last thought before we go.
Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books. And be sure to get
well, certainly, we thank all of you on the American Muslim 360 channel who join us on Wednesdays, and we thank all for joining us on Facebook Live. We appreciate you, and until tomorrow,
all around the world, we say thank you
to
our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Jeong Kunyong, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Madasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jared, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan,
thank you,
Tashakur,
Blog Talk Radio,
Saudi Arabia,
goodbye.
Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.